Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Good morning. It's time to get up with KD and Kyrie Irving. Reunited in Boston, but it was actually Jason Tatum who stole the show. Are the sub 500 Nets in big trouble? Plus, Aaron Rodgers running out of time to make the most important decision of the NFL offseason. Is he going to stay or is he going to go? Our NFL insider has the latest, and the Cowboys are facing big decisions in Dallas. What does the expected loss of one of their biggest weapons mean for Dak Prescott? We'll let you know. Good morning, everyone. I am Shea Cornett. I'm in for Greeny today. We have so much football to get to, including the latest on Aaron Rodgers. And we have these guys. His name is Jeremy Fowler. His name is Tim Legler. And also you can hear us with Dominique Foxworth from his living room. And there's Dan Orlowski from Bristol. Lots to get to, but let's start in the NBA legs. And let's begin with the Nets visiting the Celtics yesterday, because this was a good one. Kevin Durant and the Nets, as I said, in Boston. That guy right there, Jason Tatum, my goodness, was he good yesterday.
What a role he has been on. And when he gets it flowing from the three, now he's basically unguardable because he gets into his mid-range game. He can finish, but he was feeling it from deep. Boston rolling.
Yeah, later in the fourth now. Nets are down eight, and that's where we're going to pick it up. And it's Durant here. Mid-range jumper. That's going to fall. Durant trying to keep the Nets in this thing. Nets possession, rather. Durant, another mid-range shot. That's going to go. Durant just trying to do it. He would finish with 37 points. Less than three to play. Celtics leading by one. Again, Tatum fighting the double team. Nice look there. Tatum has 47 points. Just under 2 minutes left at this point. And again, the Nets still struggling to catch up to the Celtics. Kyrie Irving here. Drives, pumps, hits the mid-range fadeaway. Irving would finish with 19 points, but it was not enough. Celtics now 130 remaining. Celtics leading by one. Tatum with the ball. Lovely. Tatum would finish with 54, and he ties Larry Bird for the most 50-point games in Celtics history. Celtics win it.
It's easy to be concerned. It's easy to be worried and pissed off and mad. It's easy to do that. We could point fingers and, you know, blame our season on other things, but let's just go play. We got another game. We got 17 more, and let's see what happens.
All right, 17 more doesn't seem like a lot of time for them to finish this out. The Nets are one game under 500 through 65 games. Are you panicking?
No, not at all, because no team has dealt with more, and they have that guy. And I was watching the game yesterday thinking to myself, Kevin Durant's the only guy in the league that can make the claim that no point can you force the Nets into a bad possession if he's on the floor, because there's no shot that's unmakeable. There's no shot that he can take that you think is a low percentage shot. And he virtually is the only offensive player in the NBA you can say that about, because of some guys have physical restrictions with their size. Some guys you can force to a weakness for them. That's not the case with Kevin Durant. He answers so many different things, and now you get him back. Kyrie Irving, at some point, they're hoping, is going to be able to play. Ben Simmons, even though he's under a lot of pressure, you think about the value that he's going to add to this team once he gets there. I look at this team and say, they added three starters at the trading deadline. They just got Kevin Durant back. They're waiting to get Kyrie Irving back. They don't have Ben Simmons, a two-time All-Star, who has seen the floor yet. There's still so much more there for the Nets, and they have Kevin Durant. That's why I still believe they can be a real legitimate threat in terms of coming out of the Eastern Conference.
Okay, so yesterday Woj reported that we don't know when Ben Simmons is going to return to this team. It's not going to be before Thursday when they have to face the 76ers. And so I know you talked about Kevin Durant now being back in full, but the reality is, since he's returned from injury, they're 0-2. Do they have enough time to get this figured out once Simmons does return?
Yeah, I think they do, because the thing about Ben Simmons, you're not going to worry about a disruption to your offense. And that's what typically you would worry about in something like this. He's not a ball-dominant player in terms of getting his own shot. He's going to create pace. But more importantly, I watched the game yesterday. I'm watching Jason Tatum do his thing, and I'm saying, they got Bruce Brown on him. Very good defender. Bruce Brown's my size, 6'4". That's not long enough for Jason Tatum. Mm-hmm. They had Seth Curry on him quite a bit there down the stretch. Not big enough. You look at Ben Simmons, that's exactly the kind of player that you get Ben Simmons for, to guard a Jason Tatum. And it's not just Tatum. It's if you play the Heat, you need somebody to guard Jimmy Butler. That's Ben Simmons. If you play a team like Milwaukee, Chris Middleton and Giannis. If you play a team like Philly, and let's pray we get Brooklyn and Philly at some point in the postseason. He's going to, believe it or not, guard James Harden, which would be the dream matchup we'd all want to see.
Yeah.
But that's what you get with Ben Simmons. He's one of the top defensive players in the league. He's 6'10". He can guard any perimeter player, hound, harass, contest, make them less efficient. They didn't have it yesterday. Tatum goes for 54. So, yes, Ben Simmons adds value immediately. Despite all of the things you want to say about him and all the pressure he's under, he will do that immediately.
Okay, let's just say this, though. If the Hawks win today against the Pistons, the Nets are going to slide to 10th in the East. That's not a good scenario with 17 games left. We don't know when Ben Simmons is coming back. And yet again, we're talking about chemistry with the Brooklyn Nets. And so you're not panicking, I know, but how many games is enough to build some chemistry with this big three when they're ready?
Well, listen, we don't know about Kyrie yet as far as playing at home. So let's just say he plays road games the rest of the year. That's fine. If he can play all of those, if you give this team 8 to 10 games together at the end of the year, it's going to be enough. Because you got to remember, they also just added two other starters in this trade. Seth Curry and Andre Drummond, they're just learning how to play with the new guys. They haven't really learned at all how to play with Kevin Durant. So to me, this is the one team I look at in the East, and I would say Golden State's the one team in the West because they haven't had Draymond. Klay Thompson is not close to what he needs to be. James Wiseman is around the corner. Andre Iguodala is coming back. So when I look at Golden State, I look at Brooklyn, I say those are the two teams that still have the most left we haven't seen on the table yet. And that's why I'm not panicking about Brooklyn. Clearly, you don't want to be in a play-in because now you're leaving it up to one night somebody has a bad shooting game,
yep,
foul trouble, a bad call, you name it. Now all of a sudden it's in someone else's hands and you're going home. So you don't want to be in that scenario. But if they are and they have 8-10 games under their belt at the end of the season and they've got Kevin Durant, I still think the Brooklyn Nets are going to get out of the play-in. And now it's somebody at that top of that East to get this team as an 8 seed or a 7 seed, it's almost unfair to think that that's what you would end up having to play.
All right, good. You mentioned the Warriors. We'll talk more about them later. Tim Legler, thank you so much for the time. All right, let's turn to the NFL because yet again, here we are talking about Aaron Rodgers, awaiting the decision of one Aaron Rodgers. We are one day away from the NFL franchise tag deadline and must also decide on the future of their star wide receiver, and that would be Davante Adams. So where is Rodgers, you might ask, on a day like today, one day away from oh, there he is. That's Aaron Rodgers. He's in Santa Barbara. Why not? To officiate the wedding of Packers offensive lineman David Bakhtiari. Matt LaFleur reportedly also in attendance. This is what we're doing at such a critical time like this during the NFL offseason. And so let's talk about Rodgers because that's what we do here, right? We have to discuss what is going on. I know you were at the combine all week, Fowler. Do we have any sort of timetable or understanding when Aaron Rodgers is going to make a decision?
Well, we got the 36-hour window before Davante Adams needs to be franchise tagged. So that's sort of an artificial deadline. But here's what I'm hearing. The Green Bay Packers have made a significant offer to Aaron Rodgers to keep him long term. That could be like a 3 to 4 year deal to potentially spread out the cap hit. Now, the Packers are all in on doing this. There's some other teams that are lurking that have inquired. Denver Broncos are one. No firm decision from Rodgers. Packers still have no desire to trade Rodgers. In fact, I talked to a source who said that Rodgers might even need to retire if he wants to be traded because of all that the Packers are going to want. They would probably want not only premium picks, but potentially some young, good players on rookie contracts that would cripple the team acquiring Rodgers.
So he would have to walk away to kind of get what he wants ultimately, which I know is something that he doesn't want to do, but we will find out, of course, in a little bit later. 36 hours, not a lot of time, so we'll obviously be keeping a close eye on this as we always do, but at this point now, it feels a little selfish, doesn't it? Because we're sitting up here talking every single day about the decision of Aaron Rodgers, and every day that passes, it angers me more and more. Dan, does it feel selfish from your vantage point that Rodgers has not yet made a decision?
No, absolutely not. Two things before I get into my answer. Number one, Aaron Rodgers and I were drafted the same year, and we both have officiated weddings. And then two, Dom, fix your left collar. I can't let my boy be on television like this with the collar coming over the top. Fix it for me, please.
When you got a face like this, no one's looking at the collar.
It's true.
That you wouldn't understand.
Way. Not in a good way. I don't think this is selfish at all. I'll push back on Mike T, who I love, Mike Tannenbaum, who said last week, he thinks it's selfish. It's not Aaron Rodgers' job to have multiple plans set in place organizationally for what his multiple options may be. That is their general manager, Brian Gutekunst's job. Aaron Rodgers' job is to sit there, or at least responsibility, is to sit there and have communication with his organization to say, when is the deadline that you need to know my decision by? And then it's the organization's job and responsibility to sit there and say, okay, if Aaron Rodgers comes to us and says that he wants to come back and play for the Green Bay Packers, how do we make that happen, not only for the individual, but then also to have a team that is championship caliber? It's their job to plan that out. Or if he comes to us and says, hey, I'm going to play this year, guys, I'm just not going to play in Green Bay, then it is their job to figure out how to handle and execute a necessary plan to make that happen. Or if he says, I'm done playing. It's not Aaron Rodgers' responsibility. That's not him being selfish. There is a reason, and Dom knows this, why the NFL has that time from the end of the season till really the new calendar starts. It's because guys exhaust themselves during the football season, and then they don't want to make an emotional decision 2 weeks after whatever the end result of your football season is. So I don't see this as selfish. I'm hoping it happens by next Monday at the start of free agency, because then I think it makes sense. But I disagree with Mike T respectfully.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think you nailed him. You said it's not his job. Right at the beginning, Aaron Rodgers has never asked Brian Gutekunst to throw a touchdown, so they should not ask Aaron Rodgers to design their roster going forward. And much like you looking at my collar, I think some people are focused on the wrong thing. You focus on how good a player Aaron Rodgers is. Aaron Rodgers has been outstanding the last couple of seasons. MVP last two seasons. If any player should have the opportunity to take his time and make a big lifetime decision like this, then I think it's Aaron Rodgers. So right. I can't get on board with anybody thinking that Aaron Rodgers is selfish. It's so rare that players have any power and leverage in this situation. Me as a player guy, I'm at no point am I going to tell a player that he is being selfish for taking the time that's allotted to him. I wouldn't be upset if somebody held out, and he's not even doing that. He's still on schedule, and if they can't make a couple contingency plans, then maybe they shouldn't be running an organization.
I think the point, though, here is why people are probably getting frustrated, someone like myself, is because Rodgers came forward and essentially told us that this wouldn't have to be a long decision process like it was a year ago. It was going to be a quick decision. How many weeks are we removed from the last time we saw the Packers and Aaron Rodgers on the football field?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're technically, Dom, you being a cat guy is blowing my mind. Not a cat
guy. That's
my
guy.
I'm disappointed in you.
I wasn't, but the kids wanted a cat, so I become a cat guy.
Dad.
It's part
you're
of being a dad.
Good to be a way to be a good dad. Hey, I would say this. We're in, what, March 6th or something today? So we are just about 5 or 6 weeks from the end, maybe about a month from the last time we saw them play against San Francisco. Fast forward this 6 months, Shay, right? Let's say that Aaron Rodgers makes a decision to leave Green Bay, and he did it February 25th. And all of a sudden, in September and October, he's sitting there and regretting that decision. Would we want Aaron Rodgers to make the decision that he feels is the best for him? He has earned that right in that time frame. To sit here and say that he needs to have this decision done right now, I feel like we are expediting what his time frame is, because we want that. I get that fans and us football fans want to know that decision, but for us to think that the Packers have opened up this cap space, they freed up some cap space, and they did it without at least having a conversation with Aaron and sitting there and going, Aaron, for us to get you back, what are the necessary steps for you to come back, and what are the things that we need to have happen? They're not doing this out of recklessness. There is a plan in place by this organization that they have had in communication with Aaron Rodgers to sit there and figure out what is going to be necessary for us to give ourselves the best chance for you to be a Packer next year. If we're sitting here and he comes back and it's January of 2023 and he's the MVP again and they're going to the Super Bowl, none of us are going to go, man, he made that decision a week late.
Two things here. First of all, we started this segment by me asking if Aaron Rodgers was selfish, and somehow Dan turned it into me kind of being selfish for wanting an answer. And also, Mike Tannenbaum did text me and told me that he loves you, but you are dead wrong in everything that you're saying, Dan Orlowski. So we'll have to revisit this.
Spoken like a general manager.
Yeah. We'll have to revisit this later on. All right, coming up, if you think Russ returning to Seattle is a done deal, you need to think again. The one team that may make a big push to trade for Wilson, and the Cowboys are facing big decisions in Dallas. What does the expected loss of one of their biggest weapons mean for Dak Prescott? We'll discuss it next.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meet nutritious in the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Now, we referenced Dominique's cat earlier. There it is. That's little Lamar on Neek's lap. Lamar Jackson was meowing the entire morning meeting. Now,
Neek's last name's not Jackson.
Last name's not. I'm sorry, Foxworthy. My bad. Can you keep he's Lamar a Bengal.
He's a Bengal named Lamar.
I love it. Look how
you
petting
that
now.
Cat is so creepy to me with that sweater jacket type thing you have on.
Well, I mean, you like being you is creepy killer to me, so we're even.
I think it makes Neek look even more baller. Austin Powers style.
Oh, all right, let's run the hurry up here, beginning with some big news for Patrick Mahomes this morning. Fowler, what do you got?
Yeah, let's start with the franchise tag. Orlando Brown, the first player on the board to be tagged, as our Adam Schefter reported. So he'll be one of probably 7 to 8 players league-wide to be tagged. Now, the Chiefs, when they traded for Brown last offseason, it was understood that they would place the tag on him in 22. Watch for the wide receiver spot. Chris Godwin potentially with Tampa being tagged a second year. Mike Williams with the Chargers. That could happen as well. They want to keep him long-term without question. Now, let's go to Carson Wentz. Now, talks out of Indianapolis did not produce much momentum about a deal. The Colts have been very coy about their plans. I know Carson Wentz does want to stay in Indianapolis. He really likes his time there, wants to get a second year to make it work. He's got $15 million in guaranteed money on the books. That increases to $22 million. Colts have major decisions to make, but have not made them as of yet. Now let's go to, look at the footwork. Who we got here? Oh, Russell Wilson, of course. So he is signed with the Seahawks through 2023, as you see. Now, talking to people on both sides of this, Wilson's side and Seattle, most don't expect a deal right now. As far as a trade to another team, Wilson is laying low. He's not going to make any sort of major moves. He's going to watch what Seattle does this offseason, but teams will keep calling. Denver is a potential prime target here because if they strike out on the Aaron Rodgers front, they could pivot to Seattle. And I'm told Wilson could be amenable to moving to Denver. He's not afraid of like the AFC West gauntlet, maybe more so than going to the East Coast. He could stay on the West Coast, build something with a foundation and a winning roster.
That's interesting because when he was on the Today Show last week, obviously Russell Wilson was saying how he doesn't really want to move to the East Coast. Yeah. And now obviously you're referencing Denver. Just really quick, I want to stay here. About a year ago now, Russell Wilson released like a list, or his agent did rather, of teams that he would eventually want to maybe go to.
Right.
Do you think he's going to do that again, or what's going to?
No. So from what I'm told, he's taking taking a much different strategy this time. He's going to lay low. He's going to watch what they do this offseason, see if Seattle makes some major moves to improve the team. He has some ideas that he thinks can help them get to a Super Bowl. Last year, he wanted those ideas heard. This year, he's going to put the ball in their court. And so if he's traded, it's going to be because of Seattle making that move. He's not going to be the bad guy here and force his way out. This is a guy who has a great legacy in Seattle and wants to continue to foster that. And so something's going to have to move. Now, here's the thing. Seattle has talked to multiple teams in the past about dealing Wilson. So there has been some friction in this relationship. So if that resurfaces, it would not surprise anybody league-wide.
Okay, so now that it sounds like Russell Wilson wants to stay put in Seattle, Dan, do you think the Seahawks should try to trade him?
Absolutely. And I don't think Russell Wilson is unavailable in trade talks. I just think that's conversation or kind of organizational speak. I think that Seattle Seahawks should absolutely entertain trading Russell Wilson, but I think it starts at 3 first-round picks. I think if a team calls Seattle and says, we are starting offers, 3 first-round picks, he gets traded. Because first offers are only that, first offers. The reality is this for Seattle. They're not a good football team, and they're not a good roster, and they're not going to be one for the next 2 seasons. This is a roster that is depleted with talent. The last first-round pick that the Seattle Seahawks made that was good was Bobby Wagner. That's in 2012. They've drafted 3 Pro Bowlers in the last 6 years, over 52 picks. One of those cats is a punter. They're the 4th most talented roster in their division. I understand sitting there going like, man, how can you move on from Russell Wilson? Because you're not good. And you might as well start ripping the Band-Aid off right now and entertain a team like the Cleveland Browns or the Tennessee Titans or whoever may call and start that offer for 3 first-round picks and say, Russell's great, but we are not a good enough team to entertain or good enough team to keep him on our roster and think we have a now and or a future.
I mean, I don't think that's completely outrageous, but I do think that if you want to put together a good roster, the most difficult thing to find is a franchise quarterback. Getting rid of one is not going to make your team better. So I agree with you. I'll even extend it and say that maybe this roster won't be good enough to win a championship at least the next 2 or 3 seasons. But let's assume that Russell Wilson can play for at least 5 to 7 more seasons at a high level. Getting rid of him, if he wants to be there, is always a bad idea. Getting rid of good football players, bad idea. Getting rid of great football players, awful idea. But if he doesn't want to be there, I think that's the true question. Is last year it seemed like he didn't want to be there. I believe in the school of Mike Tomlin in that we want volunteers, not hostages. So if he doesn't want to be there, then I'm on board. Get rid of him. Get as many draft picks as you can to start this rebuilding process. But if he is happy to stay in Seattle, then we're going to build around you going forward.
Let me ask you this, though, Dom. Put on your player hat. If you were Russell Wilson, would you be happy to stay in Seattle? And I'm not talking about the geographical location.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying from a roster.
Aren't you scared of or paying attention to the same conversation that somewhat gets had about Aaron Rodgers of, oh, you only won one? Because at some point, you've got to sit back and have an honest assessment and go, we're not a good football team. Does DK Metcalf even want to stay there?
It's worse than Aaron Rodgers because it's like he only won one and it was because the defense was great. So, like, I understand where you're coming from. However, the point is that you can turn around a team in football relatively quickly and they have the track record at least to show that they can put together a good roster and win a championship. Not every team can do that. So I'm with you. It's not like as soon as you go somewhere else, you automatically become a contender. But I don't know. If you have something, a situation that is proven to work, then I understand the reason for him to want to stay also.
I'm going to jump in real quick. Pushback. 8 of the last 10 years, Seattle's won 10 or more games, and that's with running the ball, Pete Carroll's formula. It's not like they're letting Russell Wilson throw the ball 60 times a game. I just not expect them to just rebuild and win 4 games next year. They're going to be competitive. Pete Carroll's 70 years old. I don't necessarily think he wants to rebuild with like a Baker Mayfield or a draft pick right now.
Yeah, he doesn't want to reinvent.
Russ is on the table.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, coming up, the Cowboys facing big decisions in Dallas. What does the expected loss of one of their biggest weapons mean for Dak Prescott? Plus, oh, what a weekend for LeBron James. Can his desperation win Saturday night be a turning point for the Lakers this season? We'll discuss it next on Get Up.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
The Red Cross is providing humanitarian relief in response to the crisis in Ukraine. If you would like to help support and donate, please visit redcross.org/ESPN. Back here on Get Up Now, we're going to play a game of free agent fix. Ask the guys how to fix each of these teams. Jeremy, I'll start with you first here. How would you fix the Patriots?
I got a bit of a surprise. Wide receiver would be the easy pick here. I'm going to go Carlton Davis, the cornerback. So you're swapping out Davis for J.C. Jackson. He's a great player. Jackson's going to do very well on the open market. But I just never got the sense that the Patriots were all in on keeping him. They're not going to franchise tag him. Meanwhile, Davis is going to go to a spot where he can play a lot of man coverage that plays to his strengths. Big 6'1 corner. He's going to do well there.
Interesting, because J.C. Jackson constantly was a turnover machine. Neek, how would you fix the Raiders?
Well, I mean, it's a bit of a wish list, but if Devontae Adams becomes free, assuming Aaron Rodgers moves on, then Devontae Adams becomes free. I think adding a real reliable receiver, I mean, more than reliable, game-breaking receiver to replace the holes that they have in their receiving corps now will be outstanding for the Raiders.
Okay, good idea. Dan, how about the Cowboys? That's where we're going next. How would you fix the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, try and keep your own guys. I mean, starting with their tight end, Dalton Schultz, I think is such an important part of their offense. I think he's Dak Prescott's favorite and most reliable pass-catching target. The Cowboys don't have a lot of cap space or money to deal with, but I think he's such an integral part of their football team moving forward.
Speaking of the Cowboys, here's what Adam Schefter tweeted over the weekend in regards to Amari Cooper and his future in Dallas. The Cowboys are, quote, likely to release wide receiver Amari Cooper by the start of the new league year. That's per league sources. Cooper is due $20 million in fully guaranteed money on the fifth day of the new league year, which would be March 20th. So time's a ticking here, but it sounds like the Cowboys are going to move on from their wide receiver. And so, Dan, do you think the Cowboys are better off without Cooper?
Absolutely. And I think two things can be true, that Amari Cooper is a good player and the Cowboys offensively are better without him. I think the Cowboys operate out of 12 personnel at their best. One back, two tight ends is 12. And that's why I think keeping Dalton Schultz is such a big deal. Amari Cooper is a good player. He's a good, talented receiver. He's a guy that gives them some explosive ability down the field, certainly in the red zone. Was an important part of their football team, and he's probably their best vertical receiver. But if Michael Gallup is going to be healthy, that's a big deal. Look at this. Last year in the NFL, when it comes to quarterback and a pass-catching target, Dak Prescott to Dalton Schultz was the best combination in football. Look at the names. That's better than Tom Brady, Mike Evans. Look at the bottom, Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp had the best wide receiver season ever. So I think that losing Dalton Schultz would be a bigger deal than losing Amari Cooper. And I think that that's why if the decision is Dalton Schultz, their tight end, or Amari Cooper, it makes more sense to keep Amari Cooper or keep Dalton Schultz. I just think they're a better football team with two tight ends on the field. And the last thing I'd say is this. The best quarterback in football when it came to throwing the ball to tight ends last year was Dak Prescott. He was the best. In his career, Dak Prescott throwing to tight ends has 33 touchdowns and 4 picks. Good receivers, they're a big part of offense. I get all that. There's a lot of good guys in the draft. Lose Amari Cooper before you lose Dalton Schultz.
Okay, Neek, do you agree with that? Because then you're going to invest in Michael Gallup, who's obviously coming off an injury, and then CeeDee Lamb, who's tied for third in the league for the most drops.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Dalton Schultz benefited also from having those great receivers out there. So he may see some different coverages without Amari Cooper, given even though Amari was hurt for much of last season. But I think the writing has been on the wall as soon as CeeDee Lamb kind of fell to the Cowboys in the draft. You can't really afford to pay two number one receivers. And that's what both of those guys will command at some point. So I assumed, and I'm sure Amari felt this way also, that his days were numbered in Dallas as soon as they got CeeDee Lamb. And I think Dan's probably right. Now it's time to turn the page. And Dalton Schultz may become an even bigger part of their offense, but he has to understand without two number ones on either side in that 12 personnel, things could get tougher for Dalton Schultz in the middle
number,
of the field.
Dom, look at that number.
That's all right, so good. Jeremy, perhaps, perhaps moving on from Amari Cooper is just the start of what's going to happen here for the Cowboys offseason. Can you kind of lay out what we're going to expect here from Dallas?
Well, Shay, I talked to the Cowboys, and I'm told they're as locked in free agency as they have been in a long time because they have 25 players. A lot of them are really good. They believe they have two franchise tag candidates in Dalton Schultz at $10.8 million. And Randy Gregory, a guy they're trying to sign as a pass rusher who's been really good for them lately. And so they're trying to shake all this out. And the calculation really with a guy like Amari Cooper is simple. He's $20 million where you can get Dalton Schultz and Michael Gallup, their receiver coming out the ACL that they're trying to re-sign, should come together fairly quickly for maybe around the same price, perhaps a little more, but you're getting a two-for-one there, including the tight end look and the connection with Dak that Dan mentioned.
Interesting stuff. All right, we'll revisit this later on because it's kind of like Aaron Rodgers. We always seem to find our way back to the Cowboys. Guys, thank you. Right now, we're going to go to the NBA, though, and let's run the floor. The Celtics last night beat the Nets behind a season-high 54 points from Jason Tatum. It was the fourth career 50-point game for Tatum. That's tying Larry Bird for the most in franchise history. The Nets have lost 17 of their last 20, falling to one game under 500. Bad news in Brooklyn. How about the Bucks, though? They beat the shorthanded Suns in a finals rematch thanks to 44 from Chris Middleton. Jrue Holiday added 24, 17 of which came in the fourth. DeAndre Ayton scored 30 points for the Suns, who continue to be without Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And on Saturday night, LeBron James scored 56 points in a win over the Warriors, his single game high since joining the Lakers. After the game, LeBron was asked to describe his mindset as the Lakers try and make a playoff push.
Desperation. I mean, got a four game losing streak. Obviously, our season has been up and down, but I would say desperation and inspiring. We're playing inspired basketball versus a really good team. And we needed this win for sure.
All right, so Legler back here with us. Legs, so LeBron puts up 56 points. The Lakers get a win. Russell Westbrook puts up 20. Do they maybe have a pulse here in the second half of the season after what we saw Saturday night?
I will say this, and I was there. I was calling the game for ESPN Radio, so it was pretty cool to be in the building for a vintage moment like that. LeBron, you know, gave us such an incredible night. Having said that, no, I don't really think that this is going to all of a sudden change my opinion of what they did, because what they did is not sustainable. I mean, in that game, LeBron James took 31 shots. LeBron James took 11 threes in that game. And he basically kept them in the game with his three-point shooting. That's not something that's going to be sustainable. I do like some of the things that came out of the game, mainly being they fought and they dug when they got a double-digit deficit. That's not something this team has done this year. Typically, if you can get up double digits on them and hit them with a run in the second or third quarter, it's like a house of cards. They're going to fold because they don't look like they've got that collective resolve to dig out of the foxhole together. They just don't seem like they've got the will to fight most nights. They did show that on Saturday, so that's a great sign. And they will get AD back, we think, at some point. He's a huge difference maker. I just look at it like this. What you're asking them to do and have those pieces fit in such a short period of time together with what they're going to have to climb out of in the West with these top teams, I just don't see it. You know, they'll make the play-in, and they'll potentially even survive the play-in and get into a best of seven. But who are they going to get? They're going to get probably a healthy Phoenix team with Chris Paul, or they're going to get a much better Warriors team in a month than what they're going to see right now because of all they've got coming back. Or maybe they get a Memphis. And maybe that's the one team you say, could they possibly get Memphis just because they're so young, being on that stage for the first time? Would they be ready to take that leap and beat a veteran Lakers team? Possibly you'd give the Lakers a shot in that series. But for the most part, you see them going home in the first round regardless. So I'm not going to take them seriously as a threat just because of what I saw on Saturday.
Okay, but what about this? LeBron puts up 56, and maybe he puts this team on the back and he has in his mind, hey, Anthony Davis is coming back. Maybe Russell Westbrook has figured this thing out. Do you think that could be in the back of LeBron's mind? Like, hey, once I get AD back, we could go for a playoff push here.
Maybe, but most of the season, I think LeBron James' body language has told us a lot. I just don't think that he necessarily believes in this group and what they have. And I think when it comes to Russell Westbrook, Frank Vogel, and he did a pretty good job of this one Saturday. And if he can do this going down the stretch, it gives him a better chance. Stagger their minutes. Now, you know they're going to play together at the start. They're going to play together at the start of the third quarter. And they're going to finish the game together. Most of the time, he has sat Russell a few times down the stretch. But for the most part, he'll be on the court. That's about 17, 18 minutes together you can't avoid. What about those other 10 to 12? And I saw stretches in the game on Saturday. LeBron got his blow
It was Russ's team. Here, take the ball. Go be Russell Westbrook. He put his head down. He was at the rim. He was attacking. He looked like.
So why not do that more often?
He wasn't thinking. I think they're going to down the stretch. They're talking about bringing him off the bench. I think that's asking a lot of Russell Westbrook to swallow at this stage of his career and who he is and his profile in the league. I just don't know that that's reasonable. What is reasonable, find more minutes where they're not on the court together so Russell Westbrook can take empowerment of the second unit, of the backups, and feel more true to who he is as a player. Because I think that's been the hardest thing for him to accept. What lane am I in here? I'm used to playing a certain way. It's very difficult to do that when LeBron's got the ball all the time. Well, when you give him 10, 12, 15 minutes a night to do that, maybe they can find something here at the end. But again, I just look at the teams they're going to have to beat. And they're just deeper. They're more complete. Yeah. They shoot it better. They share it better. And they're connected in a much stronger way than this Lakers group.
And it's interesting because I feel like Russell Westbrook's whole career and has been predicated on his confidence, right? And it seems like he's lost some of that since he joined the Lakers for a lot of different reasons. All right, for the 37th year, Champ Week continues on networks of ESPN tonight with the West Coast Conference semifinals. San Francisco and Gonzaga in the first game at 9 Eastern on ESPN with Santa Clara and St. Mary's at 11:30 Eastern on ESPN2. You can always watch them live on the ESPN app from anywhere on your phone. It don't matter. Coming up, Lamar Jackson looking to get the Ravens back into contention next season. So why does one of our experts say he should not play until he gets exactly what he wants? Find out next.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Champ Week rolls on tonight with the Southern Conference title game at 7 Eastern on ESPN. Furman takes on Chattanooga over on ESPN2. We'll have the Sun Belt title game then, the second Horizon semifinal, Northern Kentucky and Purdue Fort Wayne. All three also available on the ESPN app, so you can watch anywhere that you want.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions for you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Dominique, it's called, if you couldn't guess it, it's called Answer the Question. And so, Dominique, let's get right to it. The Combine just wrapped up in Indianapolis. So who will be a game changer from the draft class this year?
I think Derek Stingley Jr. And to be fair, his best season was as a freshman. So that's what I remember him from, being outstanding there. And he's been very good since then. I think cornerback is probably the second most important position in football as far as impact on the game. If you get a cornerback that can shut down the way that Derek Stingley Jr. has shown the ability to do, that allows your defense a tremendous amount of flexibility, and it makes the rest of your team better. So if you can't get a franchise quarterback, you certainly want to get a franchise cornerback, and Derek Stingley, I think, is that.
Interesting you would say such a thing. All right, let's move on to the players that are currently in the NFL and talk about Aaron Rodgers. Tell me, better shot for him to win a Super Bowl, is it in Denver or is it in Green Bay?
It's hard to say that he has a better shot anywhere than in Green Bay, honestly. Like, they've been in a championship game, it seems like, forever. The last several years, they find themselves in the NFC championship position. So I think that they should be able to do that again this year to get towards the end of the playoffs and hopefully not fall on their face and miss the championship game like they did this past season. But the way that they played and the way that the NFC is kind of wide open, it feels like that's the best place to go. Going to the AFC and the Broncos would be a good shot, but the AFC is much more competitive. There are three or four teams that already know better than them right now.
Yeah, speaking of the AFC, let's talk about Lamar Jackson. Can he lead the Ravens to a Super Bowl this year? Obviously, injuries were a problem for this Ravens team, but maybe with a healthy Lamar Jackson, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's not just a healthy Lamar Jackson, but it's a healthy team. This team has been built on running the ball and playing good defense. And back to the point about cornerbacks, they lost them all. You can't win in this league, especially the way that they play, an aggressive blitz style of defense that puts their corners in man coverage without healthy cornerbacks. So I do think Lamar obviously has MVP level ability. So yes, they absolutely can go to and win the Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson.
Well, Lamar Jackson certainly betting on himself. Speaking of, the Ravens quarterback recently sat down with LeBron James and interrupted the shop crew when he was asked what lessons that he takes from LeBron James. Take a listen.
Everything and being a champion. Like, I feel like that's the one thing, you know, I want to take from, if anything else, you know, being a champion and being a billionaire, you know. That's just what I've been thinking about ever since I was a little kid, being a billionaire and being a champion.
Okay, so don't we all, though, Lamar? You know what I mean? We all want to be champions. We all want to be billionaires. Yeah. But Jeremy Fowler now here with us. And in terms of being a billionaire, how close is Lamar Jackson to getting to his first thing on his list?
From one billionaire to another. Yes. I just talked to somebody with the organization. I was told they're going to get this done. Like, they're determined to do a long-term deal with Lamar Jackson. They feel confident that it is going to happen eventually. But the Ravens have sort of put this in Lamar Jackson's court. They've said, hey, when you're ready to talk some particulars, come back to us. We will hash this out. Lamar Jackson has not done that yet. Maybe that's strategic. It's also March. There's 5 or 6 months before anything would have to get done before the season. And so the team remains confident something will shake out here, you know, somewhat soon. But right now they have 22 unrestricted free agents that they're focused on, could make some cuts. They have to address several positions. They're more focused on that right now.
Okay. And when Jeremy Fowler holds up his phone and tells me he just talked to someone, I feel like I take it very seriously. So that's good news. Hopefully a deal does get done here sooner rather than later for Lamar Jackson. But Neek, let's move to the actual football field. What kind of steps do you want to see Lamar take this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the MVP season was flawless, and then he came back and was not nearly as perfect. Last year, there was some inconsistency in the decision-making. Going through a couple of those games, particularly the Browns one, stands out in my mind. The home win against the Browns where Lamar Jackson was just continuously throwing it to the wrong team. And it was something that we hadn't seen out of Lamar Jackson, despite the fact that I think when he came into the draft, a lot of people viewed him as kind of a running quarterback. He's really been quite poised in the pocket and hesitant to scramble for much of his college and pro career, and been pretty good about reading defenses and making solid decisions. Last year was an aberration, so I hope he gets back to playing in a more consistent manner. And also, like, let loose with the running attack. I've always been slightly disappointed in the amount of scrambling attempts that he takes, because they're there sometimes. And the more that he does that, the looser the defense gets, which I think can compensate for some of his accuracy issues.
Speaking of him letting loose and running the football, in terms of getting a contract done, like Jeremy was talking about here, what do you think needs to happen for him to make it to the football field? Doesn't this need to happen sooner rather than later, given the style of play that Lamar Jackson likes to use?
Well, I think they need to keep it. Oh, go ahead, Dom. Sorry.
Nope, Dan. I want to hear Dan's opinion on this.
I just think his health is a big deal, and I think his health is dependent upon his offensive line. Dom, you mentioned that MVP season, both his tackles went to the Pro Bowl that year. And so the question of, can Lamar elevate his game this season? Well, if the people around him are good players that stay healthy, yes. And I think the two biggest question marks heading into this season for both Lamar and for the Baltimore Ravens when it comes to his individual performance and their ability to get back to championship standards are, can that offensive line be rebuilt? You know, Ronnie Stanley, their superstar left tackle, has played 7 games in the last 2 years. Is he going to be healthy? How reliable is he going to be? Villanueva, their right tackle that came over from Pittsburgh's a free agent. So that offensive line needs to get back to being a strength of a unit. And then you somehow turned your segment of Answer the Question into a cornerback segment. You know, how does the new defense do with Mike McDonald, who's coming back from being a part of that organization and from the University of Michigan as their defensive coordinator last year? How does their defense hold up? So, listen, Lamar is spectacular. He's going to get his money. But Dom knows this. This is the risk versus risk you play as a player and or organization. As a player, you sit there and say, I'm going to bank on myself both with health and performance, that I'm going to play at my optimum level in a contract situation. And then organizationally, you bank on that player, or you run the risk of that player getting hot and carrying you to the top of the mountain, and then him being able to name whatever price he wants.
So Neek, why hasn't he prioritized a contract then? He could get that out of the way.
Right. I wish I knew. If you think back to how this organization was before they put Lamar Jackson in, they were on the verge of firing, honestly, one of the best coaches in football. Then they put Lamar Jackson in, they go on a run, and then they're Super Bowl contenders up until now. So what he's meant to this organization, it'd be outrageous if they weren't willing to give him a superstar-level contract, something like what we see with Josh Allen or a player like that, because he's meant just as much to that organization as anyone else. But I do want to touch on the injury concerns. Like, I'm not as concerned about Lamar's running ability causing him to get injured. I'm not sure that the correlation is there for those type of quarterbacks. But what I am concerned about is, even if he gets injured at the same rate as other quarterbacks, it does impact his game more than it does other quarterbacks. So Josh Allen, who's a talented rusher, if he pulls a hamstring, he still can affect the defense as much as he does normally. But Lamar Jackson, if he pulls a hamstring, the ability that he has to threaten the defense completely changes.
I think those are good points. Two things I wanted to make a point of is, we have to go back to the moment that the Ravens drafted Lamar Jackson as well. Once you draft a player of his very unique skill talent, they've made every decision within their organization, at least offensively, around that type of player. You know, so that's why, and as they should have, he's such a remarkable talent. The second thing would be this, and it's a question for Jeremy. Is Lamar still representing himself in this? Because if I'm right, he did in his initial rookie deal as well, or him and a family member, maybe his mother. Is he still representing himself as they get into these contract negotiations?
Yeah, Dan, it's my understanding that I think he has help, whether it's through his mother who has managed some of his affairs or through some attorneys. He does not have a formal NFL Players Union agent. So that is a bit of a hurdle. It's not like the Ravens can just text or call a guy they know well, they have a relationship with, and start to hash out some details. It's different in that case.
Yeah, but they do know Lamar Jackson pretty well. I mean, he should prioritize this. All right, coming up, time is running out on Aaron Rodgers making the biggest decision of the NFL offseason. When's it coming? And could he be headed out west? We'll discuss it. This is Get Up.